Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
The best trips don't just take you somewhere new. They change the way you see the world. On Wayfinder Life-Changing Travel, uncover the delights of every destination across city hideaways and crystal blue shores. Sponsored by Season 2 launch partner, Fiji Airways.
When it comes to a stopover, people don't recognize the value until they actually do it. So I wanted to see how stopping off in Fiji and doing my buffer there instead of going straight back to Sydney, how that shifted me into the mentality and got me ready for going back to real life. And you know, the best cure for anxiety is feeling nurtured and calm and taken care of. And I think Fijian hospitality lends into that quite well. Fiji kind of wraps around you in a way that's warmer than everywhere else. I think it's because the culture grew up centered by community.
Listen to brand new episodes of Wayfinder Life-Changing Travel on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Trailblaze. Jamal Simmons, and I'm here with my buddy, Matt Butler. How you doing, Matt?
I'm great, Jamal. How are you?
Good. It's just the two of us this week. We don't have a guest for you because we thought we would just dive deep into a question that's been on my mind a little bit for the last week, because last week we talked about the Barack Obama presidential center opening. But one of the things that was very evident at that opening were all the presidents were there, including the most recent president, Joe Biden. There was a little internet chatter about Joe Biden, but now we have a question on the table. What to do about Joe Biden in 2028? If you were a candidate for president, how would you handle Joe Biden? We've got at least one example. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, well, there was a really interesting piece that came out on Sunday from the Axios team, Alex Thompson and Holly Otterbein, talking about Gavin Newsom betting big on Joe Biden. And he has been unapologetically defensive of Biden, a supporter of Biden, and has basically been since the election. So I think we can talk about both the substance of it and sort of the politics of it. I personally don't agree with the defense of Joe Biden, but I will say I like that Gavin Newsom has taken a position on this. He is not being sort of trying to do both sides of things. He is just like, I'm on Biden's side. I'm standing by the guy. I've been supportive of him. I'm with him. I'm ride or die with Joe Biden. I mean, I think he even said, I'll never turn my back on Joe Biden to
That's
a South Carolina crowd. Yeah. So, you
know, it went over really well for Kamala Harris.
We're going to get to Kamala Harris too, because I think she's the one that's going to really be put in the worst position because of this. But you know, I like that he is not trying to have it both ways. He's made a decision. It wouldn't be the decision that I would make, but I'm not running for president, and he is. So I like that. I mean, he's betting that voters are going to forget. Go ahead. Yeah.
Wait. You're not running for president? I thought that was the whole point of the show. I thought this was your soft launch.
I'm not. Yeah, we were going to softly undermine all of the 2028 candidates to make space for one of us to run.
I thought you were going to Dick Cheney this thing. I thought you were going to be like, I've looked around, I've surveyed the field, and the best person that you're buying is Matt Butler.
Yeah, I think I will pass on that. Let's talk about what the gamble and sort of what Newsom's setting up. So, you know, I think he's hoping that voters will forget that Joe Biden made a decision to go forward with his reelection campaign when he was really in no position to do so, that position and that idea or that decision, has had incredibly significant negative consequences for the country. And I think the person, if there is one person who is most responsible for Donald Trump sitting in the White House today, it's Joe Biden, and Joe Biden's hubris that he was the only person that could beat Donald Trump. And that simply wasn't the case. And he should have bowed out after the midterm elections. We should have had a primary election. The nominee would have been stronger. It probably would have been Kamala Harris, but she would have been had, you know, a year and a half of running to get her ready for the general election instead of 107 days. And Joe Biden, he have to be able to talk about that. And he is going to have, that is always going to be with his legacy. So Newsom's hoping that people won't think about it that way, that they'll be like, oh yeah, I kind of like Joe Biden. He did a great job the first 2 years in office, right? We were in a terrible spot with coming out of COVID. He was like a steady hand. He passed a lot of important legislation to get the country going again. But really, you know, it was the last decision that was the bad one. And that's the one that he's going to be judged on, I think.
Well, I appreciate you giving him credit for the first 2 years in office. Those were the years that I was around.
Yeah. Yes. When I left, the whole place went to shit.
The whole thing went crazy.
The whole place went off the rails as soon as I walked out the door.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it's Joe Biden's fault, coupled with late-term capitalism and racism. So if you put all those things together around immigration.
Sure. I mean, but look, if Biden had done a little bit more about late-term capitalism to, you know, rein it in a little bit, we'd be looking at a little different scenario. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah, no, I'm joking a little bit, but I think that obviously that decision to run again was ill-fated. I've said it here before. I think while the first 2 years were fantastic in terms of policy, and actually they were really good in terms of that midterm election in 2022, I think that midterm election actually gave everybody a little too much confidence because, you know, we were expecting the red wave. Instead, we won two governor seats. We won an extra Senate seat, and we only lost the House by 4 or 5 seats. So. Yep. People felt like, oh, well, wait a minute. Maybe we can pick this lock in a presidential year and keep Donald Trump out of the White House. Turned out that was not the case, including because Joe Biden just really wasn't up to the job. And I think if we were all being honest, after Afghanistan, Joe Biden's numbers cratered and it just never really came back. Inflation happened. The administration never had a great answer for it. Kind of answers moved around a bunch. And so that didn't work out. And then obviously, you know, Kamala Harris had 100 days, 107 days, I've heard, 107 days to try to do something different. So now you've got Gavin Newsom. And I think Gavin Newsom saying, I'm not going to walk away from Joe Biden is incredibly loyal. Mm-hmm. We'll see if it works out for the rich white guy from California, better did from, you know, a woman of color, a vice president who tried a similar attack and didn't work out very well for her. But we'll see if that works out a little better for him. I think that I've been trying to think about what I would advise a candidate. Right? Like that's been my job, right? Working for candidates around the country, leaders. Like what would I advise candidates to do about Joe Biden? And the best thing I could come up with is respect, but not embrace.
Yes.
Right? Like respect Joe Biden. He did a bunch of great things, point out the legislative accomplishments, point out his entire history of, you know, service to the nation, obviously his personal tragedies. But there are lots of things I would do differently. If I were running, you know, if I were president of the United States or if I were, you know, a candidate for president, I mean, maybe that's the answer. I don't know if that satisfies anybody or trying to thread the needle or take half a loaf all the time. But, you know, it's tough. It's a tough question to honor our forebears yet go a different direction.
Yeah, the article talks about, you know, some of the candidates and kind of the positions they've taken. Shapiro has been a little bit negative about the Biden administration. And some of that is also he likes to mention the Biden-Harris administration to kind of keep that little feud going. You know, Chris Murphy has said some stuff. And also, you know, in that article, they talk about Kamala Harris in the book saying, oh, you know, him running again, that was reckless. And that, you know, obviously Jill Biden has responded like, well, you didn't say anything at the time. Which, you know, I mean, first of all, if the vice president of the United States had said that the president of the United States who was running for re-election should not be running for re-election, I mean, that would have burned down the internet at that point. It would have been an incredible act of disloyalty.
Everybody would assume that you're just doing it for yourself. I mean, that's the other part of that, right? If you're the vice president and you said the president shouldn't run, it's like, I wonder who you think should run if you don't think he should be the guy. You're not exactly the most disinterested observer. in that question.
Yeah. So, look, that's going to be a problem for Kamala Harris throughout this election is because she didn't distance herself from the Biden administration in 2024, in the 107 days that she did have, every time she tries to now, they're going to be like, well, but why didn't you then? And why didn't you this? So I think that's still that tension and that problem is going to be that is ultimately why she's going to end up not running. I think, I will stick with my prediction that she doesn't run. But it's that tension of, you know, you had a chance to, you know, speak out differently on Gaza, to speak out, you know, differently on the economy for anything. And it's just going to be very hard for her not to have to be tied to the Biden administration. So,
you know, there was a question in that Axios article about one of the reasons that political reasons Gavin Newsom may be sticking with Joe Biden is because Joe Biden's very popular still with African Americans, particularly in South Carolina, which is a very important primary. So the question is, you know, if Kamala Harris doesn't get in the race, that may help him in South Carolina, or even if she's in the race, it may help. But what's interesting is the second part of that question was whether or not Biden would endorse Harris. I mean, would endorse Gavin Newsom. If I'm Joe Biden, I think you can't do that. Even if you like Gavin Newsom, even if you think he ought to be the nominee, to not endorse Kamala Harris. You don't have to endorse Harris either. You could be neutral. Right. I'm above the fray. We got to like let the party play out. You could do that. But to endorse one candidate over Harris, I think would be devastating to his legacy with African Americans, who really have been among his most loyal constituency in the Democratic Party.
I think that's a very interesting point. I hadn't thought about it kind of that in that specific of a way. It's just sort of like, you know, this person was your vice president. You need to stick with them. And especially because there has been a little bit of sniping back and forth now between not by Joe Biden himself, but between Jill and the vice president. So I do think what's very interesting about that endorsement, the thought of Biden endorsing is, you know, they mentioned Gavin Newsom having Hunter Biden on his podcast.
Yeah.
And Hunter saying, look, I will either campaign for you or campaign against you, whichever one is going to help you the most, I think, which is kind of paraphrasing one of Joe Biden's own lines. But I thought that was pretty funny. And so, you know, whatever's going to help you the most, I can be for you or against you. You just tell me what you want. But Hunter Biden clearly was fully supportive of Gavin Newsom's presidential ambitions.
You know, I mean, you know, the public profile that Gavin Newsom is building, it's one that I understand what he's doing. And I think it's very smart because it's all about strength. And I am who I am. I believe what I believe. I'll say what I believe. And I'll go anywhere. I'll talk to anybody, even when you're not happy about it. Remember, he was interviewing those Republicans on his podcast and people were upset about that. And then he's got Hunter Biden, right? And people were like, why is Hunter Biden? Like, why are we talking about Hunter Biden again? I thought we already handled that. And now he's saying he's stick with Joe Biden. You can argue about each individual tick of the clock, but really what he's doing is building a profile of, I'm Gavin Newsom. I got flaws. I got things you're going to disagree with.
Yep.
I don't care. I am who I am. I wouldn't say what I believe. That's smart in this moment. It's smart.
Super, super smart. Super smart. Because he is, I would say, you know, people are looking for authenticity and they're going to be looking for people outside of the establishment. And, you know, Gavin is pretty establishment. You know, I mean, like he's been in office for a long time. You know, you're the
one of the wealthiest families in the country.
Exactly. So, he's got to win on that authenticity thing because he's not going to win on the anti-establishment thing. And, you know, maybe he's able to say, look, the California establishment is different than the Washington establishment. And, you know, look, it's all, I think we both agree that being a governor is sort of the place that you want to be coming from in this election because you want to have executive experience. So I think it's interesting. I agree with you completely. And I certainly want somebody who is taking positions and not trying to have it both ways. So I think that's a key to this election.
All right, so let's throw your guy in there, not the DNC chair, but the running for president, Pete Buttigieg. the guy who should have formerly been the DNC chair.
Right.
So Pete Buttigieg, who was in the administration as transportation secretary, how does he handle Joe Biden, do you think?
Well, I think he's got to stick with Joe Biden because Joe Biden stuck with him as his transportation secretary. He was there for all 4 years. You know, he did not raise any flags he's in kind of an impossible position, not quite as impossible as the vice president, but like the transportation secretary can't be raising questions out loud about the competency of the president to run for reelection. It would have been an impossible position for him to be in. But, you know, so is that going to now sort of drag Buttigieg down? Like, what did you know? What did you see? You know, you didn't say anything about this. And even if he couldn't, like, people are still going to ask that question. I think he's going to have to really work, and he's going to have a tough time. I think he sticks with him and then tries to draw some contrasts. Luckily, he did not run for president in 2024, so he will be able to have the freedom to say, oh, well, I disagreed with this at the time, et cetera, and he won't have a record of not having said that in a general election campaign like the vice president will.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter, from plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
The best trips don't just take you somewhere new. They change the way you see the world. On Wayfinder Life-Changing Travel, uncover the delights of every destination across city hideaways and crystal blue shores. Sponsored by Season 2 launch partner, Fiji Airways.
When it comes to a stopover, people don't recognize the value until they actually do it. So I wanted to see how stopping off in Fiji and doing my buffer there instead of going straight back to Sydney, how that shifted me into the mentality and got me ready for going back to real life. And, you know, the best cure for anxiety is feeling nurtured and calm and taken care of. And I think Fijian hospitality lends into that quite well. Fiji kind of wraps around you in a way that's warmer than everywhere else. I think it's because the culture grew up centered by community.
Listen to brand new episodes of Wayfinder Life-Changing Travel on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, it's interesting. The other person who is carving out the I'll say what I think profile, but in a different way, is Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, particularly when it comes to the Biden administration. There's an old TV line, like, he took the challenge from Kamala Harris. And then he met it, right? He said, okay, well, if we're going to have a fight about it, then I'm going to fight with you about it.
Yeah.
And, so they've got their like spat going back and forth. He's disagreed with Biden on some issues. He talked about, I think in this Axios article, he talks about how the administration didn't move a lot of money out.
Yep.
So people could benefit from it. And I will tell you, when I was in the administration, it was frustrating because we wanted to talk about what the vice president in particular really wanted to talk about, how money was moving places. And we just didn't have a lot of examples to choose from to talk about the actual physical spending that had taken place. You know, she always wanted to say, I was on the corner of 3rd and Main, and we built, we filled potholes and built a pedestrian bridge and did all these things. But sometimes it was hard to find that data. So I think Shapiro is trying to take that other tack, which is, I'm willing to disagree with them very openly with that administration. Don't put that on me. I'm a different guy, and I got a whole different record.
Yeah, and I wonder if that is, and I'm not sure if this is a chicken and egg situation, but Shapiro's taking that position that is sort of, challenging the Biden administration. And Newsom, who I would think is probably competing for a lot of the same primary voters as Josh Shapiro in sort of that gubernatorial, more or less moderate sort of range, that he is, I'm going to be very pro-Biden in this situation. And so, because Shapiro is the one that he needs to take votes from of the early sort of front runners and people are talking about a lot.
And so the person I haven't seen her exactly on this, but I imagine I know what the answer would be if she were asked, because I've seen it when she was asked about other things. Alyssa Slotkin, whenever these things come up with these other politicians and people doing,
He just says things like, I'm tired of talking about the boys. I'd rather talk about the middle class or the what's happening in foreign policy or whatever. She has a great way of just being like, these boys are off doing this little boy business that doesn't bother. It's not about anybody else. It's just them playing their own personal games while I'm trying to like focus on what's really going to work for American people. I just think that's a super smart and obviously she can do it in a really in a very specific way because she's a woman candidate. But that, I like the way she does it because it blows everybody else off. You know,
I agree. And you know what? I cannot wait for these debates because I do think we have some really, really interesting personalities and we have some like, and the people who are running are very different and their backgrounds are different. Their approaches are different. Their demeanors are different. But most of them are extremely smart, extremely well spoken. I mean, it's going to be these debates are going to be I think they're going to be good. They're not going to be sort of the boring sort of everybody agreeing about everything. I think there's going to be some real sparks, which will be good.
And and then we'll see, like the Rahm Emanuels of the world who jump in and try to
cannot wait. Can't wait for him to be on the debate stage.
Right. Like sort of knuckling up with people about whatever thing
great.
It is.
It's gonna be great. And like policy Rahm agenda. And Shapiro have to take on each other. Oh, it's gonna be a slugfest. It's gonna be awesome.
Right. And then I imagine maybe she runs for the Senate from New York, but you could see AOC in that mix as well. Somebody I was talking to this week was saying how she's doing a really good job of trying to get out from under Bernie's shadow while not repudiating Bernie. Like she's definitely still in the Bernie camp, but you're not really seeing her do the Bernie events anymore, the two of them together. I think maybe their math on this was they did that tour together and that was kind of the handoff tour. Right,
like sort of launching.
Now it's your
forward.
Turn.
Yep,
absolutely. You've got crowds. You've got momentum. I'm going to step back and focus on some legislation while you go out and do the politics.
Yeah, I think AOC's been doing a great job, and people are talking about her 2028 aspirations all of the time. I think I think she is. She's had a couple of policy positions that she's been sort of out on the left in maybe 3-4 years ago, or even the last couple of years that maybe are not going to be the greatest once kind of negative ads start flying in the primaries. And people like primary voters, I think, love to play pundit, and so they'll be like, "Oh, you know what? This, she actually can't win the general election, so I'm going to vote for this other person." I think that's her biggest risk right now is sort of that sort of moderate thinking, and then obviously just the Democratic establishment coming after her the way that they did after Bernie. So,
and her strength here is going to be that. So I was just thinking that, one of the things that the sifting mechanisms in the party, you've been there, I've been there, is the donor class, right? You got to show up on the east side of New York. You got to show up in Hollywood. You get down to Miami and raise some lawyer money. You got, there's all these different places you got to go.
Doesn't matter for her.
Stations of the cross. Right. She doesn't need it because all her money is going to come from small dollar, like internet money. But one of the things that happens in those donor events, I think this is the prejudice a little bit of the Democratic Party, is there's this sort of intellectualism that people want to engage in, and they want you to be able to have a policy position on every little finite point they come up with. Yep. And whether or not you check the box on whatever their progressive axe to grind that they have, because they're funding some entity that's pushing an agenda, and they want to know like, where do you stand on my entity's agenda? And she doesn't really have to do that. She won't have to.
She really doesn't. And I would also say, the Democratic establishment, like, I don't know that trick is going to work this time because, like, nobody is less popular. I mean, maybe I'm not even sure, like, if you check, the Democratic Party versus Donald Trump's popularity, I mean, they're not too far away from each other. So, having the establishment against you, I mean, that may just, like, be rocket fuel for her campaign.
So here's the thing. So if the establishment is against you, you've got to really embrace that and run hard on that. Mm-hmm. The worst thing to be is a candidate who is not getting establishment support and is unwilling to make that a political issue.
Yep.
Right. Still wants the establishment support.
Right.
But because here's the thing I would advise any of these candidates who are going through this. If you're winning, the establishment will be with you.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about... No,
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, when Mamdani ran that primary, that was won the primary. That was not the case. They did not jump on board. They did not.
Well,
maybe eventually.
But you know what, though? Quietly, there were a lot of backdoor meetings, a lot of backstage conversations. People sort of saying, you know, he was sending emissaries out that, you know, I'm not going to wreck the economy in New York. I got some agenda items, but I want to work with people. You know, there was some backstage conversation happening that people didn't come out and support with him, but they didn't organize huge amounts of money to fight him either.
Yeah, but that sounds like Mamdani reaching out to the establishment, not the establishment being like, oh, this guy's a winner, we're coming along. Now I think everybody can recognize that this guy he's got something special. I will again say
that could be
super
true.
Super disappointed that New York City did not bid on the convention, because I think a convention in 2028 in New York City with Mamdani as the star, I mean, that would have just been blockbuster numbers for the Democrats. It would have been fantastic. Now the Republicans would have loved it too, but you want to put
also raised
star players, put them on screen, put them in big chairs. Mamdani is one of our stars right now. There's no question about it.
Yeah, but let's be real too. Like, it would raise some questions the party is trying not to have to really engage in. And there's a real rift in the party between the staunchly pro-Israel wing of the party and the Israel is not behaving itself well wing of the party. And I think that rift is a tough one to manage if you're in New York with Mamdani, I
can see that, but I honestly think that part of the problem of the Democratic Party is that we have not been dealing with questions like that. We try to avoid them, and we don't take them on head on, and we don't take a position. We try to like thread the needle, and that's the recipe for disaster. And it hasn't worked. We've tried it for three or four elections in a row, and it's not worked.
Yeah. Okay. Well, see if you can get some. See if you can get some more courage out of those guys down there in Capitol.
Exactly. More Gavin Newsom authenticity. So you know.
Absolutely. So one more thing before we let Biden go. In terms of this conversation, how do you think? How do you think we deal with this question of Trump and Biden's age, and how did we just let Trump off the hook because of Biden and because Biden was older? But it looks like Trump's age is it's such a big deal right now. It looks like he's fading right before our eyes, including this made up story about the reflecting pool. The reason why I'm asking this question, because I think we very often look at our weaknesses on the Democratic left. We look at our weaknesses and then we get nervous about attacking the Republicans on something we think they can attack us back on. Mm-hmm. And I think the one thing about the Republicans is they don't have that kind of belly gazing. If they think you're weak on something, they will attack you, even if they too can get like a return fire attack. And do you think we've learned anything from that in this era? Or do you think we're still susceptible to the same cautiousness?
I mean, look, I think Democrats suffer from an addiction to logic and they never want to be hypocritical. And they don't want to be seen as hypocritical. And they care a lot more about that than Republicans do because Republicans don't mind. I mean, even Donald Trump, I think, is on video saying, oh, the lining of the reflecting pool, it's so strong what we're putting in. You can't cut it. I don't want to give anybody an idea, but you can't cut it with a knife. And then it's like, oh, they came and cut it with a knife. I mean, it's like unbelievable. Like they don't care. But like the rest of the party has embraced that as well. You know, like you've got people like Lindsey Graham who have been, you know, staunchly anti-Russia their entire career. They're like, oh, you know, who cares about Ukraine? Like let it go. Everybody, there's you know, anyway, I just, they don't care. So I would hope that we don't. I'm not sure where in 2028 that this is going to be that much of a issue, because I mean, really, all the candidates that we're talking about are I think probably under 65 at the time of the election. So I think we're going to be a little different position. And all the top Republicans that we're talking about are probably in their 50s at oldest, right? I mean, J.D. Vance is he's not even 50 at this point, right? So,
yeah. I don't think it would be age in particular, but I was just thinking about how we didn't attack on that, because I think we were all nervous about the Joe Biden wound. And there'll be something else that comes up where we know these guys are totally susceptible, and we will let them off the hook. I worry that will happen, but maybe not. Maybe
we'll have to see. I think it is a worry that we are too beholden to, like I said, logic and, you know, the fear of hypocrisy and making sure that all of our arguments make sense and that everything reinforces each other. I mean, it's we're a party of lawyers, right? it's what they taught us in law school. They programmed our brains to do this. So
it is true. The party of lawyers. All right, man. Good to talk to you this week.
Good to talk to you. We'll see you next week.
All right, guys. Don't forget, you can email us at trailblazepod@gmail.com.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end. Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
The best trips don't just take you somewhere new. They change the way you see the world. On Wayfinder Life-Changing Travel, uncover the delights of every destination across city hideaways and crystal blue shores. Sponsored by Season 2 launch partner, Fiji Airways.
When it comes to a stopover, people don't recognize the value until they actually do it. So I wanted to see how stopping off in Fiji and doing my buffer there instead of going straight back to Sydney, how that shifted me into the mentality and got me ready for going back to real life. And, you know, the best cure for anxiety is feeling nurtured and calm and taken care of. And I think Fijian hospitality lends into that quite well. Fiji kind of wraps around you in a way that's warmer than everywhere else. I think it's because the culture grew up centered by community.
Listen to brand new episodes of Wayfinder Life-Changing Travel on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age appropriate.
And safe. Made just for the little ones.
Plus, Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.